it was a really special moment just because I looked up to Kevin so much. He was such a like powerful leader, and his presence, you just felt it when he walked in the gym. Yeah, he said, you know, why are you doing this? Like, why do you love the game so much? And like, what was the moment you knew that you wanted to, be in the NBA, be doing this job you're doing? Because he showed me a lot of respect for somebody that was at the absolute bottom of the totem pole. You know, he would always talk about, you know, the Celtics, their names on both of our checks. I don't think he realized that I wasn't getting a check, but the idea was we were on the same team together, despite the disparity in our roles. So yeah, and so I got to talking about my childhood and how Isaiah Thomas was my hero, and he shared a similar story about Isaiah telling him that in a high school gym that he was gonna play in the NBA. So it was a pretty cool moment of Isaiah Thomas inspiring both of us.
That was Joe Boylan. I'm your host, Marnie Gellner, and this is Wolves Plus.
Can't get the shot. Edwards! Oh, my!
Alexander Walker.
Lando!
The throwdown!
Tremendous!
Towns now. Driving on McDaniel.
Oh! For the love of elevation!
Joe, not only is your title as assistant coach, but also director of player development, which sounds like a very important but also very broad job. What would you say like top few responsibilities are that you would describe to people as being the director of player development?
I would say I'm in charge of kind of supervising all of the player development coaches, which we have a bunch of. So the guys' personal coaches, supervising them, kind of giving them guidance and feedback, and then just kind of taking control of the non-practice time that guys are on the court. So pre-game, optional shooting, before practice, after practice, kind of just organizing, scheduling, stuff like that. And then I also do a little player development myself, working with individual players on the court.
So we'll get into a little more of what you do with the Wolves on a daily basis, but I wanted to go back to where you were from, which is Royal Oak, Michigan, right? But I couldn't find a whole lot of information about where you grew up, what kind of family life. So can you tell us about parents, siblings, just growing up in Michigan?
Yeah. Well, I come from a great family. My parents just celebrated their 45th wedding anniversary.
Aww.
So they have a really cool origin story, kind of came from big families, and neither of them had a lot growing up and met each other and kind of built this life together. I'm the third of four children. I have two older sisters and a little brother. So just had a pretty storybook childhood growing up in Royal Oak, playing outside, you know, playing hockey in the street and pick up basketball and football and a bunch of kids in the neighborhood. So a really fun childhood. And yeah, cheering for the Michigan sports teams.
Which one?
Well,
Spartans or
I Wolverine? Claim both of them.
Really?
Because I went to school in Boston, so I was going up against a dynasty in football and baseball, and I needed some bragging rights, so I just adopted both Michigan and Michigan State. But Michigan was a big, I loved the Fab Five. They were a big inspiration for me.
Mm-hmm.
So they were probably my first team that I was a big, big fan of. So I'd probably lean Michigan, but I don't know. Both. I just claim them both.
Okay. Well, then you have a lot of good times.
Exactly.
If you're cheering for both.
Yeah.
You don't have to pick an allegiance. You played high school basketball,
mm-hmm.
obviously, and then played college basketball, as you said, in Boston at Emerson, which is a Division III school. You were team captain 2004, 2008 were your college years. But after your freshman year, when you weren't playing or weren't playing as much as you thought you were supposed to play,
mm-hmm.
you transferred to Colorado State. And I heard you tell a story about an epiphany you had in your life at that time. What was that epiphany?
Yeah, that was that I wanted to be a basketball coach. That happened after I left. I went to school to be a broadcaster. So I grew up, my heroes were George Blaha and Bob Costas, and I wanted to I knew I wanted to sit courtside at NBA games. So that was going to be the way I did it. I was going to be a broadcaster. So Emerson had this great broadcasting program. That's why I went there. And then I got there, and it wasn't what I wanted it to be. And so I left, and I went to Colorado College. I was on the court practicing, and I stepped off the court, and I just remembered my coach from Emerson imploring us to talk. If we weren't talking on defense, we ran. So there was a lot of talking in the gym because he loved to see us basically suffer. He loved to punish us with running. So I stepped off the court and nobody was talking, and I thought, the coach should really say something. The coach should step in and tell these guys that they need to talk. That's how defense is played. And then I thought, man, I could tell these kids to do that. Like, this could be my job. And even at Colorado College, super small school in Colorado Springs, I was like, this would be a great life just to live here in the shadow of the mountains and, you know, coach kids my age in basketball. Like, what a job that would be. So then that's kind of when I made the career decision that I was going to be a basketball coach. Mm. So
after that happened, then you actually transferred back to Emerson. Your college coach was Hank Smith.
Yes.
You asked him, maybe even begged him,
mm-hmm.
to take you back
on
the team.
Yes.
That had to be a humbling experience.
It was, but I knew I needed to do it. I knew that I kind of had an attitude of entitlement a little bit. Like, I thought I deserved to play, and I thought I deserved all these things. And that experience of leaving and kind of gaining an appreciation for things that weren't easy really changed my whole mindset and kind of outlook. And so I didn't care. Yeah, I said, I'll come back. I'll mop the floors. I'll do anything. I want to learn from you. I think I could become the best coach possible by playing for you. So, yeah, it was humbling in a really good way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you ended up playing a lot, too. You started the final 83 games of your college career. And I read that as a player, you were an agitator.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate.
What were some of your tactics?
Oh, well, I always have kind of had a gift for pushing people's buttons. You know, I can get
you
under
call
people's
that a gift?
Skin. Yeah, I think so. there was nothing off limits. I would talk trash about, you know, your shoes or your socks or your game or make up things. I was a super annoying player. I would just get in your face. I wouldn't let you walk on the court. You know, I was like a Patrick Beverly. Like, if you were taking a step, I was bumping you. I was getting in your face and flopping a lot and just making life miserable for people.
Did you take a lot of pride in that?
I did. Yeah, I did.
So once your playing days were over at Emerson, then your sort of next phase of life began. And I'm not sure if I have the dates all right and the jobs in the right order, but in about 2008, you were working for Attack Athletics in Chicago, kind of a training facility. Michael Jordan used that training facility. And then around the same time, the Chicago Throwbacks of the Premier Basketball League. You were doing some coaching and player development. What level of basketball was that for you?
Yeah, so we were hoping that guys got cut in the D League at the time, now the G League, so that we could sign them. So it was like professional in some ways. The players were being paid, but it was not the highest level basketball. We played at the Attack Center, where our home games were with the Throwbacks. But we traveled around. We played in Rochester and Battle Creek and some other small cities around the country. So it was low-level professional basketball.
But it was basketball.
Yeah, exactly. And I got some head coaching experience, and I got to fly for the first time, you know, on a team's dime and get to do a lot of different experiences because I had to do a lot of different things, super small budget. You know, I had one assistant coach, just a small group of guys who you never really knew who was going to show up to practice or the games. You know, we had four plays in the playbook, and it was a lot of fun, big time growing experience. I was 23 years old, so I was younger than most of the players on the team, and so it was a good challenge. It was a good experience and challenge for what was to come.
Sounds like a good place to start.
Yeah.
A good starting spot. In 2009, then, about a year later, you joined as a basketball operations assistant for the Maine Red Claws. That was also a D-League franchise. What led you to that job in Maine?
So my boss at Attack, Mike Procopio, he got hired as an assistant coach. So he had worked for the Boston Celtics. He had done player development before in the NBA. So he had a relationship with the Ainges, and Austin Ainge, Danny Ainge's son, was the head coach. And so Mike was brought in to do player development, be an assistant coach, and I had developed a relationship working under him, kind of was his assistant at Attack, working players out. And so he made it happen. He brought me along. You know, they put me up at the Residence Inn that the players all stayed at. It was the first year of the franchise existence in Portland, Maine. So there's a lot of excitement. It's a big-time basketball, you know, state, really. And so they loved it, embraced the players. And, yeah, I drove the bus, basically. It was my job for the team. So.
Okay, that was my next question.
Yeah.
That you actually drove the bus.
Right. Yes. So the bus was the size, it was 15 passengers or 14 passengers. And I think if it's 15, you need your bus driver's license. But the bus was just small enough that I could just drive it on my regular old driver's license. And that was what my responsibility was, getting the team safely to and from practice, the games, the airport. You know, we flew out of Logan Airport, so it was a good little drive most times. And few times we got in some close calls. You know, my technique was I'd put on my blinker, wait 5 seconds, and then just hope for the best and start merging. And if I had to change lanes, so I was not an expert driver by any means.
No.
But it was a really fun job because we had a lot of characters, and again, it was just such a learning experience of trying to create value for yourself even when the job responsibilities aren't the best.
Interesting. I'm glad you at least had the blinker.
Yeah, throw it on and then just hope for the best.
Great strategy. Your NBA career, so that was another D-League, that was the affiliate of the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
Your NBA career then started in Boston with the Celtics as the video intern.
Mm-hmm.
And Doc Rivers was the head coach at that time. How did you get that job?
Yeah, so they lost a video assistant like a week before the season. So at the time I was already back in Chicago, back at Attack, working players out, thinking I didn't know what my next opportunity was going to be. I was trying to find a job. I had just done this experience in the minor leagues, which was good, and it's all about networking. You know, it's all about meeting people that can put your name in the right room, and that's what happened. They lost a video assistant at the last minute, and Danny Ainge's son, who had coached the team, was in those meetings and said, you know, I got a guy. I don't know if he knows anything about basketball, but he showed up and drove the bus every day. So I think we can rely on him. And so they called me and offered me the job, and I packed up my car and drove to Boston.
Is that a paid job, a video intern?
No, it's not. In fact, I had to enroll at community college. So I enrolled at Bunker Hill Community College so that I could get college credit for my experience. So I actually paid for the experience to work in that video room.
And did you do it for a full season?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have a job outside of that? A paid job?
Well, I was working 80 hours a week, so that would have been pretty difficult. Okay. I pretty much just lived at the facility. But my big trick was I unplugged the refrigerator and I never turned the lights on in my apartment so I wouldn't get any electric bills. So I tried to just minimize expenses where I could. You know, I ate and lived at the facility. Go home, sleep. Yeah. I had a mattress on my apartment floor, no furniture. But it was an amazing opportunity. I was in the building every day with Doc Rivers, Lawrence Frank, you know, all types of people in the front office that ended up becoming GMs, Mike Zarin, Danny Ainge, and then the players. You're around Kevin Garnett, Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, it was something out of a dream.
I had read a story, you mentioned Kevin Garnett, I read a story that one night you were at that practice facility, I think you were taking out the trash, late at night, you didn't realize anyone was there, and Kevin Garnett was there, and he stopped you, and he asked you a question. What was the question that he asked you?
Yeah, it was a really special moment just because I looked up to Kevin so much. He was such a like powerful leader, and his presence, you just felt it when he walked in the gym. And so it was so cool to be around him. And yeah, he said, you know, why are you doing this? Like, why do you love the game so much? And like, what was the moment you knew that you wanted to, be in the NBA, be doing this job you're doing? Because he showed me a lot of respect for somebody that was at the absolute bottom of the totem pole. You know, he would always talk about, you know, the Celtics, their names on both of our checks. I don't think he realized that I wasn't getting a check, but, the idea was we were on the same team together, despite the disparity in our roles. So, yeah, and so I got to talking about my childhood and how Isaiah Thomas was my hero, and I had his poster up in my wall, and I used to limp around my, my house because of what he did in game 6 on the sprained ankle, and draw number 11 on the back of all my T-shirts. Like, I just loved Isaiah Thomas, and I wanted to be him. And he shared a similar story about Isaiah telling him that in a high school gym that he was going to play in the NBA. He told me the first time he believed he was going to play in the NBA was that Isaiah Thomas told him, the Chicago legend, and Kevin was in Chicago at the time playing high school. So it was a pretty cool moment of Isaiah Thomas inspiring both of us.
Yeah, and it all came because you were taking out the trash.
Yeah, just in the facility, hanging out, doing the dirty work.
In the summer of 2013, then, when you moved on from that job, you got an actual paying job.
That's right.
Yeah, with the Golden State Warriors as player development coordinator. Now, this was just before they went on the championship runs, but it was at the time when there was a young Steph Curry, a young Klay Thompson. And if your title is player development coordinator and assistant coach, I'm assuming, did you work on developing those guys?
So when I first got the job, my first job there was video coordinator. I became the head video coordinator after my stint in Boston, which was a ridiculous job for me to get because I was totally unqualified. I had 1 year experience in a video room. I didn't really know what I was doing at all. But again, it was just the right people speaking up for me has always been kind of how I've got any opportunity in my career. And so someone that I'd worked with in Boston also went to Golden State, and in his own interview for the job, he pitched me for this job that I was totally unqualified for, and the head coach bought it. So he told Mark Jackson in his own interview, he said, do you have a head video guy? And Mark was like, well, my two top assistants are both recommending me someone. I don't really want to choose one over the other as my first decision as coach, so I'm kind of like stuck. And my friend said, well, I'm sure they're both very good. I'm sure they're Dominique Wilkins and Clyde Drexler, but there's only one Michael Jordan. And the Michael Jordan of video coordinators is in Boston right now. Just a total lie.
That's how he pitched you?
Yeah, that's how he pitched me. Total lie. I mean, I was like bottom of the barrel intern, coding games. I didn't know anything. I didn't know how the software worked. And he bought it. He was like, oh, I like that. And 4 hours later, I got a phone call. Hey, do you want to come out and interview? And then I flew out to Oakland and interviewed, and he offered me the job on the spot. So, yeah, it was a very, very cool, fortuitous little 24 hours for me.
So if you start out as the video coordinator, then you start adding other duties, and then you start working with these young players?
Right. So I'm there late, so the young players come back at night. We had an undrafted rookie named Kent Bazemore, who would come back at night. We had Charles Jenkins, who was a second-round pick. And I had this history of working players out from my job in Chicago at Attack. I had worked out a bunch of pretty good players, like Gilbert Arenas and guys like that. So the players were really interested in working out with me. And so, yeah, I would work out a lot of the young guys. I spent a lot of time playing offense against Klay Thompson. After we drafted Klay, his player development emphasis was defense. Mm. So I have a long highlight tape of me scoring on Klay Thompson, which I remind him about all the time, especially when we play them. And I let the guys know here, when I score on them, don't feel too bad. I have Hall of Famers on my resume as well. So, yeah, I spent a lot of time with Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes, Draymond, in their first couple years in the NBA.
And Steph?
Steph was kind of doing his own thing. I mean, I don't know if you've seen Steph's workouts, but they're pretty...
Even then?
They're pretty complicated. Yeah, even then. Even then, he was a big... You know, the shooting was always there, but he was always a pretty committed player development guy. He had his own thing going on.
I had heard, now I don't know if this is true, but you correct me if it's not, or fill in the details. I had heard that coaching staff, that year, a couple of years you were there in Golden State, used to scrimmage some local prisoners. Like you would go to the prison.
Yes.
And you would actually play pickup games, real pickup games against prisoners.
That's right.
Why did you do that?
They actually still do it. It's still a tradition there. So you go to San Quentin, and it's a reward for good behavior. So there's like a program to kind of incentivize good behavior, and it's kind of a cool community event that happens. You go to San Quentin, and then you go in, and you're literally out there on the yard. All the inmates are circling the court. You know, it's on a concrete Wow. court, and you just... You bring your best five or eight guys. We had a great team. We had Brian Scalabrine, Bob Myers. These guys are really good pickup players. So we beat them pretty handily. I have some pretty funny photos I should share that I have from that experience.
Well, tell me you weren't trash talking.
I was trash talking like crazy. They were over there, Lakers fans, talking about Kobe and all this stuff, and I wasn't having it. So yeah, I was talking trash. Yeah, absolutely.
Two inmates.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Hey, your game is your game.
Hey, you know, it's all in good fun.
Be true. You got to stay true to who you are.
Stay true to yourself, exactly.
Okay. After your time at Golden State, you were with Grand Rapids Drive, which is a D-League affiliate, and then the associate head coach of the Iowa Wolves, mm-hmm. now a G-League affiliate. And then back into the NBA with the Memphis Grizzlies as an assistant coach in 2017. Yep, well, Mike Conley would have been on that team.
That's right.
Yeah. So at that point then, 2017, you had been in the NBA, Celtics, Warriors, dipped back into the D-League, back in the NBA. Do you feel like you're starting to get your footing? Do you feel like you're starting to figure out this NBA assistant coaching world?
I wouldn't say that. I'm super grateful for the time I'm spent in Minnesota in the NBA, but it's I don't think that anything's permanent. You know, I think that's kind of been my experience, is it's a very volatile profession. You know, mm-hmm. ownership changes, management changes, coaching changes. There's a lot of things outside of your control that determine your employment status. So I don't know about getting the hang of it or finding a footing. I'm in a great situation here.
What about in Memphis? I was talking about at that time, at 2017, time. Oh. When you're in Memphis and thinking like, okay,
yeah,
this is, I'm feeling like there's a career here.
Yeah. Not really. I mean, yeah, career in that I can figure it out, that I'm anti-fragile. I'm going to get fired and it's going to be okay. I can move to small towns. I can live in Grand Rapids or Des Moines and be happy and be productive. And I can use that as a learning experience that I wouldn't otherwise get. You know, there's things that you do in the G League that you don't have to do in the NBA. And so I think I'm better at my job now because of those experiences, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm much more grateful for all the perks of being in the NBA too. So I looked at it as necessary steps along the way. I wasn't ever in some rush to be, you know, the top coach or anything like that. I always thought this is going to teach me a lesson or give me some tools that I'm going to need later on. So I still don't feel like I have footing.
Maybe that's the life of an assistant coach.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would bet a lot of them would say that.
Right.
Well, you moved on from Memphis to New Orleans, director of player development. That was your title in 2019. Kevin Hansen was on that staff. Chris Finch was on that staff. A little foreshadowing there. Mm-hmm. How much did you learn? How much did you grow in your role in New Orleans with the Pelicans?
Yeah, that was a big turning point in my career. So when I got there, Finchie was actually running player development. It was one of his many responsibilities, and he didn't want that responsibility. So after a year of working together, he basically gave me the reins and said, you're free to do whatever you want. And so that freedom and trust allowed me to create an environment that was super unique. And we did things very differently, and the players really responded to it, and we saw a lot of success. Brandon Ingram became an all-star and won Most Improved Player. A bunch of other guys had spikes in their production, young players, and that was the big moment of you can do things differently and have success. And now I think that's what really got me the job in Minnesota, was that experience of working with Vinci and him trusting me and that trust paying off.
And it did in 2021. That's when you were hired, came to Minnesota to join the Timberwolves, director of player development and assistant coach. And you helped sort of grow this league we call the Stay in Shape League, SISL for short. I think it's just a really unique concept of guys who are not in the regular rotation. They might be coming off of injury. They might not be able to crack the rotation, might be two-way players. But they're playing after shoot-arounds, like in a real competitive game, with people acting as referees, with a clock, with statistics. How much of a role did you play in developing the way that the Wolves run their little sizzle league?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my baby. Yeah, that's kind of, I did it in New Orleans. It was great engagement from the players, from the young guys that weren't playing to, like you said, the guys maybe in and out of the rotation wanting to stay in shape and be ready, have that feel for when their opportunity was called. Because 82 games, your opportunity is going to come at some point, so you want to be ready for it. And that was the way we found the most engagement. It made it fun, made it competitive, and the guys were in great shape when it came time to play. Mm. So that was the big time payoff.
And you keep them engaged. You keep them energized. You give them competition. It's not mundane. It's not the same thing over and over.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's something to talk trash about in the locker room. And the whole team kind of gets into it. Like, you'll see Ant and Kyle and guys, as they're leaving from getting treatment, they stick around and watch. You know, a lot of guys hang out just to watch because you don't know what's going to happen. There's always some subplot and storyline. And, you know, we have a group chat, and it's we're sending out the stats and highlights and contested calls. You know, we're arguing, and it just, yeah, it's something fun. The guys want to compete. You know, you don't get to the highest level without loving competition. So when you don't get to play against the other team, it's a fun way to kind of just express that desire you have to compete.
I was talking to Chris Finch about this yesterday, and he said, you should look at the box score from just one of these Stay in Shape League games. It looks like an ESPN official box score, the way that you have it.
Yeah.
You're not messing around.
No. You got to do the little things, you know, the highlight videos. We have an all-star fan vote. The first vote just came out.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. Dacian Nix was the leading vote getter, over 2 million votes. So
you found 2 million voters?
Well, I just made it up, but they don't have to know that, you know. And so we'll update it coming up, and we'll have a second fan vote, and then we'll do a little all-star weekend where we have a skills competition. We do a dunk contest. We do a three-point contest. And we got some coaches that can really shoot and dunk. So that's another fun part of it. Give these guys a chance to relive their glory days.
Interesting. Well, Sissel is all out.
It's all out.
All out. You work individually a lot, I know, with Jaden McDaniels. We see you warm him up on the court before games. You've helped him sort of develop different parts of his game. And he really has made several leaps since he joined the Timberwolves as a rookie. What have you really done? Like, what areas have you focused on with Jaden to get him to come to the point where he is right now in the NBA?
Yeah, just, he's really done it. It's really been him. He's such a hard worker. He's so coachable. He's open to it. I think my role has just been a lot of giving him little cheat codes, little pieces of advice that he can apply. You know, just being consistent, you know, being somebody he can rely on, does the same thing every day, keeps him in the same routines. But he's such a talented player that a lot of these things are just about not messing it up, not getting in the way, allowing his talent to emerge. Because he's, you know, he was a super talented offensive player his whole life before he got to the NBA. And so it was a lot of just the messaging, telling him what the head coach expected of him, you know, what it's going to take to grow his role. and, you know, kind of cultivating that buy-in, that trust. And then once you kind of have that and he starts doing the things that you're saying and seeing the success and seeing his minutes grow and his usage grow, you know, that's kind of allowed him to continually take steps forward over the last two, three seasons that we've been working together. So it's yeah, he's such a great player, but he's such a coachable person that it's pretty easy to work with him.
I wanted to ask you about your energy and enthusiasm, because I have seen you at shoot-arounds, practices, whatever, and I know fans will see you at games. You're in that second row behind the front bench. You're at a 10 all the time. I don't even know if I've seen you dip to a 9.5.
Okay.
It's a compliment. Your energy and enthusiasm is always at a high point. Where does that come from?
I just love my job. I love what I'm doing. If I could make up what I do in a day, it would be what I do. So I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm sitting courtside for an NBA game with guys who I love and care about. You know, it's like, I'm excited. I'm excited to watch them play well. And I think I can help during the games, especially in lulls and energy. I think I can help the team win by doing that. So, and I'm empowered to do it. You know, my boss allows me to do it instead of charting deflections. You know, he lets me just turn up. So it's I'm in such a special situation that I'm encouraged to do something that I'm really happy and excited to do. I mean, I got great seats to the game, just like I always wanted.
And they're free. Well, it is noted and noticeable, your energy, and appreciated. Are there ever days when you're lazy?
Yeah, of course. There are days. There'll be days and the second night of a back-to-back when, you know, the plane gets delayed, you land in Toronto, you're sitting on the tarmac for 2 hours, you get to the hotel, you show up at the game, and I'm like, man, if I don't have it, I can't imagine trying to, you know, guard, you know, Scotty Barnes tonight or whoever. I get tired. I feel for these guys. They're the ones that have to actually go out there and do it. Back-to-backs are no joke. It's hard.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you are human then, because sometimes I wonder with that energy you have. One of your well-known personality traits, besides being very energetic and enthusiastic, is that you are a very deep thinker. You connect the mental part of the game with the physical part of the game very prominently. Have you always been that way? Have you always been a deep thinker?
I wouldn't say so, no.
When did you develop that?
I think it was really COVID. I wanted to keep helping the players and I didn't know how. So I got with the sports psychologist and I was like, hey, nobody's doing this. Let's get these guys on Zoom. Let's take advantage of this. And so we started just diving in with players. I started getting on 5 Zooms a day, grab a player, grab the sports psychologist, and dive into the mental side. So it was like really cool because you get a different experience with each player. And each guy's were at different stages of kind of their needs and their journey on the mental side. So that's really what sparked the interest in being really intentional about connecting sports psychology and the mental side of the game to basketball.
I've seen a video of, it's several video clips of you and LeBron James. He's on the court, you're on the Timberwolves bench, and in one of the videos he fist bumps you, one of them he just kind of gives you a look, and then he pats you on the butt.
Mm-hmm.
What is your relationship with LeBron?
Well, he just noticed that there was a rule that he actually just applied it in a game against, I think it was OKC. It was like a recent game. He just applied this rule that I taught him at the time. So if there's an infection control timeout, the shot clock resets. It's not a really well-known thing. It doesn't happen all that often. And we were at the end of a possession. So it was like 1 second left on the shot clock and Torian had got hit in the face. So he was bleeding, like from his eye or his nose or something. So I start screaming for the reset. So I'm yelling at the refs, like, that should be a reset. And he's looking at me like, what are you talking about? He thinks I'm wrong. He thinks I'm crazy. And I look at him and I think, I kind of expect you to know this, you know? He's such a basketball genius. I assumed he knew all the rules. And so he goes to check with the ref, and the ref's like, no, he's right. And they reset the shot clock to 14. So I said, hey, come give me my respect for that. Like,
you said that to LeBron.
Yeah, I said, hey, I need an apology. Like, you thought I was crazy, and I was right. And he was like, you're right. I do owe you an apology. So that's when he came over and dapped me. And then, so then every time he like look at me to see like what I'm talking about, because I'll come out during timeouts for rule clarifications. You know, I like, mm-hmm. I want to push the boundaries of what's allowed. There's things that I do in player development that maybe bend the rules a little bit. So I try to study the rule book so I know what's going on. And then are there ways I can leverage that knowledge into helping players? And so I'll be out on the court talking to the referees saying, hey, I want to make sure that this is the right interpretation of the rules. So that's when he comes out like, man, this guy's always talking about something. This guy's always trying to gain some little edge. And so that's kind of been the nature of our interactions.
He respects you.
I think so.
There's a video of you making a little hook shot at probably a shoot-around, I'm guessing, maybe a practice, over Rudy Gobert.
Mm-hmm.
And you have it on your Instagram.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing...
Multiple hook shots.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Multiple. Yes. Correction. You are, what, 5'8", 5'9"?
Oh, 5'11", but that's fine.
So 5'8", 5'9". And there are not many people who can say, I have made a hook shot over Rudy Gobert and I have video proof. As someone who is not tall of stature, someone who did not play in the NBA, that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, I'm nice. I have a 6-minute long highlight tape set to music with all types of NBA players on it. I'll send it to you after this interview so you can check it out. It's amazing. I have all these guys, Josh Hart, Kenrich Williams, I mean, Klay Thompson, all these guys are on my highlight tape. Rudy Gobert, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, I've scored on the best of the best. So, yeah.
And you set it to music?
I set it to music. I put a little soundtrack and I sent it to everyone in the organization. I thought everybody would want to see this.
And do they?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love watching you at shoot around when you are part of the scout team. You look more like a running back than a basketball player because you hold the ball like you're making a run,
mm-hmm.
and you take 3 or 4 steps, then maybe a couple of hard dribbles, and then maybe a couple 3 or 4 steps. So bending the rules.
Exactly. There's no referees out there. I can get away with it. I need the help.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
You have been in some form of basketball coaching for about 15 years at one level or another. Do you aspire to be an NBA head coach?
Yes. Yes.
You do. I wasn't sure if you were going to say yes.
Yeah. I don't think about it all that much just because I'm so happy in my role. I love the job I have. It's a perfect job for me. I love the responsibilities I have and the ones I don't have. You know, the head coach has a lot of things that he has to do that he probably doesn't want to do. I don't have that many of those. But I think just my competitive nature and just kind of, my dreams of holding the trophy and being drenched in champagne, I think I could do it. And I would like to do that.
Someday. Interesting. Well, I don't know who's going to argue against you. We're going to wrap up with 5 questions. Kind of random get to know you questions.
Okay.
Joe, what is your all-time favorite cereal?
I guess Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, very convincing.
I don't know. I'm not a big cereal guy. I haven't eaten cereal in a long time.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
trying to
okay.
harken back to my childhood.
When we give this question to the players, they're right on it. And they can't decide between their 3 or 4
really?
Best cereals.
I was struggling to think of any. Maybe Frosted Mini Wheats.
Okay. Should we just change it to coffee?
Coffee, exactly. Okay. Black coffee, yes.
Black coffee.
Yes.
Okay.
That's my new breakfast.
When it comes to your house, which now I assume the refrigerator is plugged in.
It is, yes.
You have some furniture.
The lights turn on.
Lights are on.
I have a couch and everything.
Wonderful. Do you like your house to be really neat and tidy, or do you let it all go? You're more casual and relaxed.
No, I like to keep it pretty tidy. Yeah. my place is super clean.
Okay. Are you more of a morning person, more of a night owl?
Definitely a night owl. That's a good part of this staff is we have plenty of morning people that can handle it. I can show up right before the meeting, and then I'm more of a afternoon shift kind of guy. I'll stay after everybody else goes home, you know, catch the guys that come in later. But yeah, definitely get my best work done at night.
Okay. How do you like your eggs? Your favorite way to eat eggs?
Is definitely the 3-egg scramble or omelet. Get it on the road, the exact same order every single time. Onions, peppers, spinach, bacon. They do a great job.
Onion, peppers, spinach, bacon.
3 whole eggs.
None of this yolkless
exactly.
Egg white.
Even if there's some confusion with the 3 whole eggs at times, it's, you know, for the most part, they get it done.
Confusion.
Yeah, like, you know, a guy may whip up 3 eggs on the side, and it's a whole to-do. But, you know, for the most part, I just like the omelet with 3 whole eggs.
Noted. Noted. What is your all-time favorite cartoon?
I got to go Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah, that was my jam when I was a kid.
When you were a kid?
Yeah.
Big in Royal Oak, Michigan?
That's right.
Somehow I feel like you can relate to those guys. The underdogs, the energy, the out there mowing people down.
To the Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Leonardo leads, Donatello does machines. Raphael is cool but rude. Michelangelo is a party dude.
I knew you'd know that. What a brilliant way to wrap it up. You are an entertaining fellow. An interesting guy. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
This was fun. Don't you think so?
I do think so. This was fun. Okay. I agree. Affirmative.